Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
Get comfortable with seeing the next few steps. Keep spot checking where you are compared to the peak only, right? You against you, you against yesterday, that's it. And you just keep moving forward because there might be some other really amazing opportunity along the way that you can't see yet, such as your mentor asking to co-author a freaking book with you. And you're like, oh, you mean I've been doing all this research for several years and have a lot to say on that topic and am very prepared for that? Sweet. Wouldn't have known that back in the day.
Finally, after 5 years of product failures, my 35th offer actually worked. And my next 55 products generated over $11 million in sales in just 4 years. But after seeing the flaws in my baby business, I decided to shut it all down and restart from scratch as entrepreneurs do. Follow me and the other capitalist pig-loving entrepreneurs as I continue my journey to $100 million in sales. I'm your host, Steve J. Larson, and welcome to Season 2 of Sales Funnel Radio.
What's up, Steve Larson? Welcome back to Sales Funnel Radio, the show where I'm documenting my journey to $100 million in sales, which we are moving as fast as possible towards. And Marley Jax and I just submitted for our Two Comma Cup Award. We started this company just the beginning of this year, so it's been going really, really well. It's been fun. A lot of structures. This is easily the most process-heavy business I've ever been a part of. You know, we're producing already like 500 pieces of video content a month. And our hope is to go, you know, we want to go double in this next little bit. We do have, obviously, each agency has like a cap, you know. So we're going to get to a spot really soon here where we're actually getting, and this is not like some fake scarcity urgency crap, but it is legit. We're like, you know what? We're not going to be able to take on the world. Now the agency model, you know, or the likelihood of that while maintaining the quality that we have. Right? That's the biggest concern. So we've been building lots of processes, and that's just, anyway, very, very process heavy business, but a lot of fun. And in the middle of this, you know, doing the Two Comma Club, Marley and I have been doing 75 hard. We're only 2 weeks in, but whew, it's been intense. It's been fun. So glad that one of my workouts every day can be a walk. So I'll probably do a few podcasts over the next 2 months, just walking. But it's nice out. It's peaceful out where we live. So I want to tell you a little bit about this book that Russell and I are writing together. And I am so pumped for it. I can't tell you how excited I am to do this. And I'll just tell you from on a personal kind of vulnerable lens here, which I was not planning on saying till this very moment. But like, y'all know that I'm a ClickFunnels diehard and I'm going to be forever. Like And I think part of it is just having lived some of the origin story, you know, in early days, at least not early. I was not at inception. But you know, shortly after and just watching it get born, you know, like I always would get a little bit jealous of seeing how many cool people like Russell would go do a project with. Always somebody would walk in. Someone awesome, Anthony DiClemente, comes walking in one day, and I was like, duh, one day I want to be the dude that does the project with Russell and have my name on that as well. You see what I'm saying? And this was something I struggled with just a little bit. I'm a highly competitive dude. I was born to win. That's just what I believe. I am not here. Like, and I've never lost a day in my life as long as I've learned from it and moved forward. And that gives me boldness in action taking. You know what I'm saying? And so, man, I'm a competitive guy. I've always wanted to do that with Russell. And while a lot of the people in the community know my name, it's still like, I've always wanted to have that and to go make that. And the stuff with his other books was so fun for me. I was a head editor in yearbook in high school. I love that process, the editing and producing process. I was already quite familiar with it prior to working at ClickFunnels. I was already doing a lot of layout and page layout for books, magazines in high school. I got 3 Colorado State Awards for it. So when I saw something at ClickFunnels, I understand layout, you know, that's something I've been practicing for near 20 years, you know, already in my life is layout and page layout. So while I'm not a funnel designer, I would certainly say I'm a layout designer. And I think it's one of the reasons why ClickFunnels is so intuitive to me, that and just how much I've been around computers in my life. And so, plus I took a ton of design classes in college. So I always wanted to, and sorry if this sounds like a side tangent, just for some more context with it. So I'm just being open with you, right? I get into ClickFunnels and I start working there, already like pooping my pants with the fact that I'm sitting next to Russell Brunson. In fact, I was so nervous to be like found out. My imposter syndrome was through the roof. I didn't really say anything the first like 2 months of me working there. I didn't really say much at all. And it's because I was freaking scared of being like, you know, found out. I thought that maybe, you know what I'm saying? And I love how many people ask me this question because I had it super heavy in front of the dude that I could never believe I would be working with one day. You know what I'm saying? And so anyway, I mean, there was so much. I mean, imagine getting that phone call. It was a huge deal. And so for probably the first or six or seven months of me working there, what a lot of people don't know is I was not just hired as like a, you know, ClickFunnels builder, is also Russell's personal builder for the clients that he was taking on. And so to demonstrate the power of ClickFunnels, one of the strategies we were using is we would just, and you see he keeps doing it today even, brilliant strategy. We'll just find the next famous person and build a funnel for them, whether or not they asked, or he'll try to make a collaboration around it and use that as a publishing storyline for whatever content he puts out. You know, like the time when he built a funnel with Grant Cardone in that sweet private jet, you know, that scratched a lot of backs. And that's just, I mean, he lives the Dream 100, guys. Like, it's not a secret how he does it. So I would always watch like these cool people roll through the door, man. And I was like, duh, like one day that's going to be me. I just want that. Like, well, you know, like I'm just like self-talk. I'm so much more hardcore in my head than I ever let out. My self-talk is wildly aggressive, probably overcompensating for something in my childhood. You know what I'm saying? Like, whoa, like, so, I mean, I'm really aggressive with myself and my noggin and working on that. but I just wanted so bad one day to do a project like together on purpose from the, you know, not just, you know, be behind the scenes, which is great. I just knew that I could do that. Like not a doubt in my freaking mind. You know what I mean? And it's the same mentality when it's like, I had this habit installed in me as a kid when I was younger, and it actually comes from the Bible. It's interesting that when, you know, in the Bible, right, talks about how, and here we go. So, all right, I believe in God, and I'm going to tell a Bible story. All right, y'all know it already. Even if, like, right, one day, right, God's like, hey, I'm going to go make the earth. Some serious paraphrasing going on, by the way. Hey, I'm going to go make the earth. Oh, man, there's going to be a ton of you that jack up, and I know that, and you're all my kids, so I'm going to, you know, let me go talk to Mama God, and we're going to come up with a plan here, right? And Papa and Mama God get together, and they're like, all right, we need a savior. Somebody's going to come down, and he's going to, you know, like, make up that gap, because we're going to miss you guys like crazy, right? Isn't it interesting that there were two that volunteered for it? Remember that Lucifer actually volunteered also to be a savior. Interesting. And does that make sense? It was the order of the hands that rose as one of the biggest lessons that I have ever learned. The order of the hands that rose. I think about this principle all the time when an opportunity falls in my lap and I'm scared. It's the order of the hands that volunteer. That's one of the things. Jehovah's hand just went up first, right? And obviously, you can't blame the everything that happened afterwards as the order of the hands that rose. But that's just one of the principles that I really like and I think about frequently, where it's like, hey, look, if someone asks for a volunteer, you put your hand in the air, right? Wave it like you just don't care. Like, I thought about that in the Army. And when I went in, my recruiter was like, don't volunteer for anything, man. You keep your hand down because you're going to get the crap jobs. And I did the exact opposite. All of basic training, man, and an AIT and all the training stuff, anytime they said, I need 2-4, I didn't even often hear what they were asking for. Just raise my hand. And I got so much trust from all the leaders because of that. And I got to do some cool crap, man, that no one else has ever done. I got to go be one of the test subjects for the NSA agents and CIA agents who were testing out and getting their certification on polygraphs. They just knew that I was a good dude by that point. It'd been 3 months of me raising my hand for every freaking job. And anyway, this feels like it's getting a little sidetracked, but my point is that I made it a habit when I was working over at ClickFunnels to raise my hand for everything. So, because this was already a pattern I was just doing, right? And there can be a negative to saying yes to everything, right? I'm not saying that for business opportunities. You got to say no to like 99% of everything once you've said yes to one thing, right? Still working on that one, but I'm getting better. So Ross will be like, hey, you want to introduce me on stage? Inside? Heck no. Are you kidding me? I did not feel qualified to, you know what I'm saying? You are not tall enough to ride this ride. Like, oh my gosh. I was so freaking scared to do that. I am heavily more of an introvert than most people think. So I was like, what? You guys, I had like a whole workout routine I would do backstage before ever getting on a stage. And if I skipped it, I'd be freaking awkward, man. So awkward. I've been on hundreds of stages now. And so that would freak me out. But that little internal voice, order the hands that raise. Boom, hand shoots up. Yep, got it. Who wants to edit this page? Boom, got it. Who wants to go and make that? Boom, got it. Give it to me. I want it. Right? And that like mentality has blessed me my whole life. And, you know, you got to be careful again when it comes to opportunities. You're not saying yes to everything that comes your way. But what I'm talking about is the growth ones when you're freaked out and really don't want to say yes, but you know you should. Right? Those. And so my head has gone in all these places while thinking about the opportunity to write this book with Russell. And I can't tell you how excited I am to do it. This is not something that I just like, oh, I never thought about this before. Yeah, sure. Like when he sent a message and asked. I've been thinking about this for years, man. And I was like, I have wanted this so bad. All I want to do is impress him. One day I heard, I can't remember who the gigantic person is that we were working and building the funnel for. But I remember hearing, it might have been Marcus Lemonis. Like it was like 6 years ago. Maybe seven? It was back in the old office. And I heard Russell tell Marcus, look, I just want you to think I'm cool. All right. So you tell me exactly what you need. We're going to go out. We're going to impress you. I want you to think that I'm awesome. And maybe we do something one day together. And I heard him say that to tons of huge people. And I was like, so I said it to him this last week. I was like, look, I just want you to think I'm cool. I'm going to impress the heck out of you. This book is going to rock. And, you know, so that was a serious amount of pre-framing. I was not planning on going down, but that's why this book means so much to me. So it's called Dramatic Demonstrations. And the book is about what we can learn from old school rich dead guys, right? Who are dead people who are marketers without the internet. Because I strongly contend that there's no such thing as internet marketing. More and more I've been down this road. It's just there's marketing and the internet is one of the vehicles we use to deliver marketing. And so most people think that the internet is marketing though, right? And so they never take a step back to go, what are the patterns in what you do regardless of channel, online or offline? Direct mail, which I've made a lot of money from, right? Or text message and AI backed, blah, 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 right? Still the same principles. And when you get to learn those, then a lot of stuff starts to bend to your will. And you get to say, you know what? I know exactly always how to create a dramatic demonstration in my marketplace that attracts my dream customers and gets them running to me with credit card in hand. Whether it's high ticket, low ticket, online, offline. It's a set of principles, not platforms. And that, remember that about marketing, right? So I'm really, really pumped for this book because I feel like I've been preparing for it for years. I have an event one of my first big events was an event called OfferMind. And the whole entire event was all about how to create an offer that is extremely attractive, right? And that model's been used by tens of thousands of people and made a lot of money. It's been awesome. But then I created a second event called Offer Launch. And that one's about campaigns and getting noise and traffic and people excited about what you're doing and really where the real moneymaker is, you know, all the noise you make in the marketplace. And so I've done the Offer Launch event a handful of times, taught those principles a ton. And so we're using a lot of that stuff also for the book for Dramatic Demonstration. So I have tons of research. And I just want to say one other thing with this. I asked Russell, I don't know why I always do this. Are you sure? It's totally my imposter syndrome that pops up. I even did this when he said, do you want to come do the one?
Hey, I hope you're enjoying the episode. Let me interrupt for just 1 minute here. One time I was speaking on the stage at this event, this guy picked up a microphone and he said, Steve, when do Facebook ads begin paying off? And I remember looking confused and just asking back, like, what do you mean? He repeated the question and said, well, we've been spending a lot of money on Facebook ads for a long time now, and we're just wondering when this begins to all pay off, when we actually start making money from the ad. I said, wait, Facebook ads are not an investment. They don't pay off someday. This is direct response marketing. So if we don't get a payoff within the first few days, we turn off the ads. How much money have you spent? I will never forget the look at this guy's face as he realized he had the completely wrong mindset about ads. And he said, we've spent over $250,000 without any return on ads at all. My stomach fell out of my body. Look, this is direct response marketing, meaning we measure the direct response of our marketing. That's why ads are the holy grail of marketing. They're not an investment that pays off someday, sorry colleges, because every dollar spent on ads should return with another dollar very soon. That's what my good friend John Parks and I are doing, the Chief Ads Officer Workshop on May 15th through the 17th. John has spent over $150 million in Facebook ads profitably and manages the ads accounts for some of the biggest names out there. John is going to take 50 business owners through his unique Facebook ads process while you follow along. At the end, you're going to have your own account running. I simply asked John to show us what's working best today in the ads world right now. John told me that one of the hardest parts of running ads today is finding the right person to do it. Traditional org charts don't really have a spot for the ad buyer, so this workshop will help you install a new role, whether in-house or if you go higher, the new role of Chief Ads Officer inside your business. This workshop is both for those who want to learn ads themselves or for those who want to learn to communicate with their media buyer better. The workshop is only happening one time in person in my event studio in Boise, Idaho, May 15th through the 17th, and all the details are at chiefadsofficer.com. Go to chiefadsofficer.com right now to save your seat and get more details. We can't wait to see you there. Let's get back to the episode.
Fun away challenge. I was like, no, I don't know if I'm the best guy for that job. Right? It's breaking my own raise my hand rule. I said yes, but I was like super nervous. And I was like, there's always been a moment for me where I like take a half step back. I'm like, yeah. Oh, crap. Wait. So I've like already taken a step forward, a little half step back before going full in. That little half step back for me is, I don't know what that is. I'm working on it though. So I guess it's a good thing though. You know, run into everything. So I did this during the One Funnel Away challenge though too. And I was like, are you sure you want me to go do this? And he goes, yeah, man. You were born for the One Funnel Away challenge. You're supposed to be. He said, Steven, it's in your DNA. I'm working on DNS records for sites. I almost said DNS. He said, it's in your DNA to come in. And kind of like, he said, you have this special way of yelling at people without yelling at them. And he's like, I really need that in the One Funnel Away. And I was like, fine. All right. I was so nervous though. I had no idea what I was getting myself into on that. I was nervous, raising the hand, moving forward regardless. Who cares? Dismissing anxiety and fear and anger, right? Just dismissing it. Yeah, you're not welcome here. All right. Same thing with this book though. And what I'm saying, and the final point I'll say in this episode is that I asked him why he wanted to write this book with me. And he said, you've gone so deep on all these old marketing stories. You've done tons of research on it. He's like, you've gone so, so, so deep on this area. He said, first, I think it'd be fun to just do the project together. And I was like, sweet. I definitely want to do the project together. He's like, also, you're very prepared. You have a lot of stuff together that'd be fun to do this with to illustrate these principles. And so my point is I've been collecting that research. I made a whole podcast show about it, right, called Launch for Profit. And I don't really do much on that show anymore. But man, some of those episodes are so dang good. They tell a ton of rich dead guy stories. The whole show is dedicated to them. And so if you don't know why you're going down a path and you're like, this is kind of working, but I don't really see where it ends, that doesn't mean that it's a bad path. You never see... I used to backpack a ton when I was growing up. A lot of backpacking trips. I miss it like crazy. Still want to do the whole 2 week with the Sherpa over the Himalayas thing one day. That's on my bucket list. But man, when you pull up to the trailhead in your car and you're looking at the trailhead, you can see the trailhead and sometimes the peak. Often you can't. Sometimes the peak. You never see the trail in the middle. And so there is 100% a benefit to seeing all the dots, planning and over planning. And if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. And all these other cutesy Instagram sayings we take as law. Blech. Drives me nuts. Right? There's certainly a truth to if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. And you plan for as much as you can see, completely knowing, with full understanding, that you're probably dead wrong and it's going to look completely different by the time you even get to step two. Like, oh, I can see past that tree a little bit more. Ooh, that rock is coming more into shape. Wow, that log's higher than I thought. I'm going to have to jump a little bit higher on the trail because that log's higher than I ever planned for it. I couldn't plan for that when I was back at the trailhead. You see what I'm saying? So it always looks different when you get in there. It's one of the fallacies of planning too much because you're overthinking it. It's not going to look like that anyway. You're literally in your head, straight imagination. That's imaginary thinking. And so it's like, get comfortable with seeing the next few steps. Keep spot checking where you are compared to the peak only. Right? You against you, you against yesterday, that's it. And you just keep moving forward because there might be some other really amazing opportunity along the way that you can't see yet, such as like your mentor asking to co-author a freaking book with you. And you're like, oh, you mean I've been doing all this research for several years and have a lot to say on that topic and am very prepared for that? Sweet. Wouldn't have known that back in the day. Easily questioned why I was still in it for a very long time. Morning. For a super long time. So my neighbors rock. Just all of them. They're so cool. Anyway, I was going to say something. I am easily a good decade younger, though, than at least 90% of them. 2 decades for that last 10%. They're super awesome, though. Gosh, I love talking with people that are older than me. They're just so wise. So, anyway. All right, guys. So I'm really, really excited for this book. We just came up with a sick outline for it that has been really a great, I don't know, just a really good reminder that when you can't see the path also, I'll tell you something cool, last thing that cool that happened this week. I'm just pumped. So this is a long episode, whatever. Another cool thing that happened this week is last week or 2 weeks ago, I started making the book outline and something happened that happens in most of my projects, which is that I go off thinking that it's going to be one thing. And as I get in it and in the weeds, it's not that it takes a completely different direction, but I often get so many epiphanies along the way that it certainly influences the direction. And so I was like, man, I've been nervous on this book. I want to do a good job. I want it to crush, right? I really, for a lot of reasons, and want Russell to think I'm cool. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of reasons I want this book to rock. And I've done just so much research in this area, and I'm very passionate about this topic organically anyway. So I've been nervous, and I've been thinking about this book outline. And that's been freaking me out. And sometimes I'll lock up and not take moves for a while because of that. I'm like, well, I don't see enough. Well, I'm still thinking about it. Well, I'm not quite sure yet. When really the best way to move forward is just to start doing anything that's related to it, just to get you in motion. Right? And then the path begins to open up after you're already in motion. I always think, okay, I think I tell more Bible stories. I've always loved the facts in the Bible that, you know, Moses splitting the Red Sea. Right? Isn't it interesting that it didn't actually split until he was like at his neck in the water? Think about how powerful of a principle that is. He didn't split the Red Sea and go, looks like I get to walk through completely dry. That dude walked into the Red Sea expecting that thing to split. That is a totally different mentality and way to live your life. That is awesome, right? He walked into the sea. Things gonna split because I freaking say it and I need something from God in this moment, right? And he was at his neckline in the water and then it split. How epic is that? That's so cool. And that's something to remember with all this. And so this same type of principle is something that I find happens in most of my really creatively heavy projects. When I don't quite know what it's going to look like, it really just means I need to get in and start working the problem before I can ever expect an epiphany to happen. You don't have the epiphany pre-action. Very rarely does that happen, right? That's when you start creating that flywheel effect and experience starts to become wisdom so that you know how to prepare for the trail a little bit better. But most raw, brand new, never had them before epiphanies don't happen pre-action. They happen post-action. They happen after you've already had grit and there's already been that frustration moment and you're like, why isn't this working? Or why can't I think what to do next? Or why can't, right? No different with this book outline. When your mentor and friend, and just that cool, epic guy, Russell Brunson, has said, sweet, just deliver to me what you think the book outline is going to be. The pressure. Think about that. I was like, oh my gosh. All righty. All right, sweet. Yeah, no, got it. Totally got it, bro. You know what I mean? That's like what I thought and kind of said. I was like, yeah, ain't nothing but a thing. And in my head, I was like, oh my gosh, this is totally a thing. Like, just stressing out. So I just wanted to just reiterate that I get a shocking amount of questions that have to do with if I ever get nervous or scared or don't know what to do next. Yes, I'm human too, right? And often when I'm in the middle of creation, I can't expect to even have the epiphanies or, hey, you know, this is the direction we really need to go. I certainly won't see everything top to bottom before I get moving, right? It's all post-action. So I made this book outline. I spent a lot of time on it. I sent a loom over to Russell going over it saying, does this kind of look like the angle you're going towards? And he was like, yes, kind of, but... And I expected that, right? We're going to ping pong like crazy. And we go back and forth and back and forth, back and forth. And then there's this moment where I had in my head a certain slide from a presentation a while ago pop in my head and to use that as an outline. Boom! Moment of epiphany, moment of inspiration, post-action, in the middle of the grit, feeling the frustration, not seeing the vision, not knowing where it's all going to go. And it felt epic that that is the framework. And then I sent that back over to Russell. I was like, dude, what about this? And that was the moment. And we're like, okay, that's the framework of the book. So that's what the book is going to be about. But it's the finding just the, and I'm sure that it'll even change itself. That's going to change. But we found the next flagpole in action, right? The next landmark. We're going to go for that ridge, right? And you keep going, you keep going, you keep going, you keep going. And I'm really excited for that. So what the outline walks through, and I was going to tell it to you on this episode, but I should end this now. I think I've near ended it three times. But what it's going to be about is I have found a very strong pattern in the order of the distribution channels that P.T. Barnum would go to. It came in a lot of mental grit again, and about a year and a half ago. And it blew me away when I saw it. I was like, holy crap, every time I see P.T. Barnum go do some huge campaign, it's usually following this pattern. And I wrote on my whiteboard as many of the P.T. Barnum campaigns that I could think through. And I started just trying to look for similarities. And I thought, holy crap, there's a big pattern, huge. And for anyone who's like, I can't spend money on traffic, ads is like the last thing I ever go to personally, right? Some people start with it. That's great. My strategy is it's one of the last things I go to. I start with organic stuff and how I've been doing that. It's so interesting how finding this P.T. Barnum pattern has influenced what I do with organic traffic. And even what Marley and I have been doing in our YouTube business, that's what we do for people. We get them to organically stand in the middle of giant red hot traffic and the stuff that's going to be around for likely years and years and years and use that as the top of your funnel, right? Look at the youtube.com and notice that that is page one of your funnel. That's your squeeze page, right? Right? Does that make sense? You're going to have a sales video on most of your first pages anyway. Well, the sales video is just on youtube.com, standing in the middle of a free traffic source. Like, yeah, that's epic. That's exactly what we do. And so it's been this P.T. Barnum pattern, though, has been influencing so much of what I've been doing. And I say I've been like 20% aware of that. And I'm so glad that this is what we're going to teach. And I'm going to totally carrot this and open loop it and not tell you exactly what it is because I've been talking too long. But alrighty, that is how the outline for dramatic demonstrations has come about. And I will certainly give you a billion more updates because I'm a marketer on the way and I will make them awesome and exciting. Thanks for listening to Sales Funnel Radio. Remember that with your sales funnels, All these principles are still true. There's not ever been a funnel that I've planned to the nines ahead of time that actually ended up exactly like that. I always tweak along the way as you get more information. That's not lack of focus. That's inspiration. It's a good thing. All right, guys. We'll see you guys later. And go sell something today. That's the easiest way to piss off a socialist. Smile. Try. Make a little money. Does charms every time.
Okay, imagine this. You open your computer one morning and you're ready to work. And then you open up your ad spend stats, horrified at how expensive it's become to buy a new customer. This happened to me yesterday, actually. You open your latest post to see that half of it has been censored or it's no longer being shared or spread around by the algorithms. And then your heart rate runs a little bit hotter as you check to see how many leads you've gotten the day before, then the week before. And the numbers in the funnels over the last month and even the last quarter are all showing the same pattern, right? You are in trouble. And as you fight the urge to create yet another offer that you can sell to your existing buyers because you're not finding any new buyers as quickly now, right? You ask yourself, self, where can I get leads? The Zucker sucker and Big Brother seems to have the real control over the health of my business. And so the question emerges, how can you get leads when your ad spend isn't reliable and your current content isn't getting people into the funnel? All while feeling the effects of a recession and currency that's worth much less and less, and social media platforms that are really making it challenging to win online. Oh my gosh, that's kind of like the situation we're in today. That's happening right now. What key moves could you make with your team in the next 6 months to replace and control your current lead flow? So that you're no longer dependent on ads for leads, all right? This scenario is what we're all in right now. So Marley Jackson and I have created a 5-day challenge called Content for Leads, teaching exactly this. Okay, any internet entrepreneur can join, but it's really meant for 6 to 7-figure earners where they can bring a team member with them so that we can show you how to install all this stuff into your business with your team right there by producing content for leads. So go to contentforleads.com now, and you'll see when the next 5-day challenge is running. I'm excited to build this with you. This is a long-term traffic asset that will convert viewers into customers, right? And I'm equally excited for you to bring a team member, which probably is gonna be the marketer or video person on your team. That way we can show you how to start installing all this stuff as well. So go to contentforleads.com and get signed up. We're excited to see you there.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.